Monitor, coming to you from Rockefeller Center, high above the drifting slush. New York, the summer festival city, is now the winter mud puddle. But, wait, I have a line that would get in here. No, it doesn't belong here. You'll have to wait. Tune in next week at this time for the line. We got through the blizzard. That gives us, city people, a feeling of great accomplishment. My name's Henry Morgan. I leaped over my share of snowdrifts to get here to the studio today. But all in all, I'll go along with the United States double quartet. Life is groovy. In these days of young Americans protesting against going to fight in Vietnam, it's interesting to find out there are many American civilians doing volunteer work in South Vietnam. One of these, Richard Stevens of Prairie City, Iowa, is just back from 13 months of service with the AID, which stands for Agency for International Development. Stevens was interviewed on his return by Monitor reporter Bill Lindsay.
Dick, why would an American civilian want to go to South Vietnam?
Well, speaking from my own personal experience, I felt that I just didn't want to sit in the stands any longer. I wanted to be part of the game, of part of what's going on in the world. And certainly, this is one of the best chances to become involved in history.
How many Americans are in the aid program there now?
In Vietnam now, we have about 1,400. We need a great deal more, however, as the program is expanding.
What was your particular job?
I have a number of tasks, especially I work with refugees. As you know, we have a great number of refugees in Vietnam. We assist them to build a new life. I also work with the Viet Cong defectors, those who have left the Viet Cong and have come over to the government side. I also do a great deal of work with youth and sports activities in the city of Hue, the old imperial capital. And I work as liaison with the 3rd U.S. Marine Division.
We've heard more stories in recent weeks, Dick, about the Viet Cong atrocities. Have you any experience with them?
Yes, I have. It's rather unusual to me, just returning here to the United States, that it's only in recent weeks that we have heard much about this, because to those of us who do work out in the field with the people all the time, it's a daily thing. In my area, for example, we one time had an entire village that packed up and fled from a VC-controlled area. Shortly after they did this, the VC came to the new place in which they were hiding. They went through the camp, the refugee camp. They burned all the houses. They killed about 20 men, women, and children. And then they selectively picked out and shot what they felt were the leaders of this group who had escaped from this area under their control.
That's one method the VC uses to try to keep control of the population, I gather.
Certainly. This indicates what I believe is a new trend, especially in the area in which I work. For example, previously the VC could operate with impunity in an area. They could collect taxes, they could spread their propaganda, and they could recruit for their army. Now, however, with an alternative program being offered by AID and the government of Vietnam, they must switch their tactics.
Can you generalize at all about the Vietnamese civilians' attitude toward American aid programs like you're engaged in?
The attitude is excellent. The way this operates is we go out to a hamlet which perhaps has not seen any government representative or anyone wishing to help them. We tell the people that there is a certain type of aid available to them. They then will meet together in a democratic fashion, will discuss what sort of projects they think will best benefit their hamlet, and then they will begin on what is called a self-help program, where we will furnish the materials, they will do the labor, building a school, for example.
After all these years of war, you haven't found the people over there to be pretty skeptical about somebody coming in and saying, we're going to change your way of life?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, they are very skeptical. They've had many promises in the past, both from the VC and from Saigon governments. However, now, when you can deliver something, this skepticism soon changes.
Thank you very much. We've been talking with Richard Stevens, a 27-year-old worker for AID, the Agency for International Development, just recently returned from South Vietnam. This is Bill Lindsay, returning you to Monitor in New York.
A young member of our unarmed forces in Vietnam interviewed on his return to this country.
There is nothing like a lark. It's America's most popular new cigarette.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today.
I like the taste. Simple as that.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today.
I think everybody who smokes should try a lark.
There's nothing, nothing, nothing like a lark.
Lark has an inner chamber of charbolic granules for a taste people really like.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today.
Great smoke, right eye chains.
Hey, there's nothing like a lark.
Have a lark today.
There is nothing like a lark. Have one.
I need my love to be
a new song by Claudine Longer, who is also Mrs. Andy Williams. And at 15 minutes before the hour, you are on the Monitor Beacon.
This is your NBC Monitor. This is your NBC Monitor. This is your station, the pulse of the nation. It's NBC.
Bom, bom. Monitor music. Buddy Greco. You don't have to say you love me.
When I said I needed you, you said you would always care. It wasn't me who changed, but you. And now you've gone away. Don't you see that now you've gone? And I'm left here on my own. That I have to follow you and beg you to come home. You don't have to say you love me, just be close at hand. You don't have to stay forever, I will understand. Believe me. Alone with a memory, life seems dead and quite unreal. All that's left is loneliness. There's nothing left to feel. You don't have to say you love. Just be close at hand. You don't have to stay forever. I will understand. Believe me. Believe me. You don't have to say you love me. Just be close at hand.
In one moment, the man the Pittsburgh Pirates say will win the pennant for them. Monitor Sports is brought to you by State Farm Mutual, the world's largest insurance company.
Hi, fun seekers. I'm Jackie Vernon. And now on with the fun. It's recitation time once again. Little boy blue, come blow your horn. Your headlights in the meadow, your wheels in the corn. Don't you wish you'd insure that car with State Farm Mutual, the world's largest car insurance company? There are more than 12,000 State Farm agents and claim representatives all over the country. One of them could be giving you fast, friendly service right now. You could have had big State Farm protection, big State Farm service, low State Farm rates, just like the drivers of more than 9 million cars. But you blew it, boy blue. You blew your chance to get the world's best car insurance value. Go ahead, boy blue. Go blow your horn. I think I see it over there by your gas tank.
Pittsburgh Pirates' hopes of winning the 1967 National League pennant in 1967 rose sharply this winter with the acquisition of Maury Wills from the Dodgers. A report from Hillary Bogdan in Pittsburgh.
Well, Maury Wills, let me be one of the first to welcome you to Pittsburgh as a visitor now and later as a Pittsburgh Pirate. First, let me ask, do you feel that the trade, yourself, of course, and for Bob Bailey and G. Michaels of the Pirates, well, you being an established performer, do you feel this was an equal trade?
Well, it doesn't matter to me whether it was an equal trade or not. I mean, the trade was made by people who have been in baseball much longer than I have, so I'm sure they know what they're doing. I can only say that naturally, after being with the Dodger organization for 16 years, I became attached, and I wasn't too pleased about being traded. But now that I'm officially a Pirate and everything has materialized, I'm just pleased to be with them. And it's one of the worst feelings that any individual can have is a feeling of not being wanted. And then when the Pirates express such enthusiasm over having me and all the people in the Pittsburgh area, I was just tickled to be a part of the ballpark club.
Well, Maury, let me add, how adamant were you in not playing for the Dodgers after your disagreement with Mr. O'Malley. Were you really set, made up your mind that was going to be it in case nothing happened?
I don't quite understand.
Well, presuming that some other club perhaps didn't make an overture in your direction.
Well, I'm not sure how many clubs made a pitch for me in the trade. But when I mentioned that there'd be a possibility that I might retire, depending on whom I was traded to, actually what I was referring to is under what conditions I was traded. If it came to a point where it was made apparent to me that I was being traded because of my being an undesirable person or something like that, or if my name was in some way smeared, you know, like that,
right.
Because I've worked so hard in baseball to try to do the job as a ball player and also be a good citizen and be have a fine relationship with the other players and the ball club and the fans. And rather than have this happen now after 16 years, I would rather just retire from the game on a good note.
During the course of the season, at the end, of course, the Dodgers won the pennant, but there was a popular opinion around that even though the Dodgers did win, the Pirates were the team that should have won. How do you feel about that?
Well, let's say that on paper, the Pirates was the club that should have won. But it only proves that pennants and ball games are won on the field and not on paper. I'm sure that the Pirates hustled all year. They have a hustling ball club. They'll do the same thing this coming season. But it just so happened that the Dodgers happened to put, along with Sandy Koufax, a few things together that the Pirates weren't able to put together, and that was the only reason we won. But the Pirates were the best club in the league last year.
Maury, a pleasure talking with you. Good health and lots of success with the Pirates in 1967.
Thank you very much.
This is Hillary Bogdan in Pittsburgh for Monitor Sports.
Now a word about Breck Concentrate Shampoo.
Agent 00 Breck has a suds bomb for you. But you don't have to duck, it's only shampoo. And so gentle to hair that the whole family will be looking just swell. Try it, you'll see. That big sudsy balm is Breck Concentrate. What a shampoo, it makes you feel great. In each plastic tube at a price that's quite low is Breck quality for a gal or her beau. Just a dab of shampoo, some water, then wow, Breck Concentrate lathers up with a pow. A balm full of suds is a feeling that's great with the gentle power of Breck Concentrate.
Simeon Corral and Anybody Can Move a Mountain. Say, one of the
moving stories in New York this week was the plight of the Playboy bunnies. The whole thing about the ones that went on strike and the out-of-town bunnies who came in to replace them is a little too complicated to go into. But one result of the story was that 50 of the striking bunnies signed up and to join the Teamsters Union. That's right. Now, bunnies aren't Teamsters, drivers of vehicles originally drawn by teams. But the proper title of that union is the International Brotherhood of... you could stop it right there. Bunnies in a brotherhood? The International Brotherhood of Teamsters, Chauffeurs, Warehousemen, and Helpers. Maybe they're helpers. Actually, though, if you think about it, bunnies fit into that union about the same way they fit into those little costumes they wear. Not quite. Morgan for Monitor, back after NBC News on the hour.
Second Sunday presents Red China, The Struggle for Power, a program special, tonight on the NBC Radio Network.